Hi, friends. Just a quick reminder before we jump into this week's teaching that we are not currently meeting in person on Sundays at the building, nor are we meeting on the internet, which feels great to say out loud. But we are going to be meeting down at the Bayfront Park in Hamilton and sending people off in small groups, individuals, spaced out over 2 hours. The whole thing's online, all the details. On Sunday strolls, contemplative walks around the Bayfront where we are trusting that the Spirit will speak to each of us in ways that perhaps even our way of gathering normally would not be facilitating. So we're quite excited about this. I don't want to waste any more time in case you've heard about this talking about on the podcast. So I'm just going to say, if you're interested in that, learning more about that, head over to eucharistchurch.ca. All the details are up there, and we would love to have you join us. We are also continuing to fundraise for two initiatives right now, for a refugee sponsorship and for some new windows in the back hall of our building, because the back hall of our building has windows that are crumbling and one wall that really needs to be fixed when that window is fixed. So if either of these interest you, also head to eucharistchurch.ca, where we'll have an update, if not now, in the next couple of days, about where we are at financially on both of those. It's really crazy and exciting to see how God's been tying these things together. We fundraise for two very different things. And you can find out there how to be involved and how to give and how to help others to give towards the work that God's calling us as a community to do in this time. All right, enjoy the teaching. Grace and peace.
So we're continuing in our series on the Sermon on the Mount, this sermon series that we've been calling The Good Road, which reminds us each week that this teaching from Jesus is a teaching about a piece of wisdom about the path that leads to life to the full. 2 weeks ago, we talked about giving and praying. Last week, we went through the Lord's Prayer and we learned a little bit about grace that covers all things. And this week, we're continuing in Matthew 6, looking at verse 16 to 18. And this is a teaching on fasting. And I got to this passage that I was going to be preaching, and I was talking to the pastors Kevin and Jill about it, and they were sort of like, are you sure you want to take this one? Like, fasting is tricky, and it is, isn't it? You know, I think that when a lot of us think about fasting, let's just name it, we think about diet culture, and we think about sort of the latest fads and how to eat in order to look beautiful according to society standards. We think about all the advertisements that we get bombarded at us for the latest sort of diet app or sort of trick to help you look the way that society tells you you have to look, and it's pervasive. Isn't it? This constant stream of you're not enough, you're not enough, you're not enough, and your body's bad, and here's how you fix it. And it sucks. It sucks that's what we think of it. It sucks that we live in a world that makes it such that how we eat can be such a source of shame. And I am excited to talk this week about fasting, because I believe that biblical fasting in any of the spiritual traditions really, actually subverts the very notion at the heart of diet culture that we are never enough and that we never have enough. And so we'll spend some time looking at fasting in general before we even read the passage together, so that we can get clear on what Jesus means when he uses the word fasting. And right at the onset, one of the things I want us to think about is the fact that fasting doesn't even have to be about food for you. If you know for yourself, you know yourself, and you know that starting to think about fasting with food would lead you down a road that wouldn't be so great for your health and for your mental wellness. Like, that's great. Just leave that be for a side. Just leave that on the sidelines. And we'll talk about fasting in a much broader way. And that's totally okay. I hope that all of us will hear in this reflection some good news that Jesus offers as an alternative to our empire of never enough, the culture that we live in. So fasting is in many ways an embodied practice that reminds us that we already are enough and have enough, even when we let go of the things that we attach ourselves to or cling to. Fasting is an experiment in saying no for a time to things that we have maybe developed an unhealthy attachment to, for the purpose of trusting that our well-being is not dependent on that thing. Fasting is creating empty space, opening our clenched fists in hopes that God will fill that empty space and will remain in a state of having enough even without that thing. And I don't know what that thing is to you. When I was thinking about what that thing was for me, it made me think of this time last year. This time last year, as you know, here in Ontario, we were in a really strict lockdown and everything was closed down, and I was full-time in my attic at my desk on my computer screen. I was doing Zoom school and I was teaching some courses at a discipleship program I was working for at the time. And every day in and out, I was staring at a screen. I was stuck on Zoom and everything was closed. And so I couldn't even, there wasn't even really many places to go if I wanted to go anywhere or if I had time to go anywhere. And one of the places that I was really sad I couldn't go to at the time was Value Village. I love thrifting. It's sort of my happy place. It's one of my favorite hobbies. Me and my husband both love doing that. And so couldn't do that. And so here's what I find myself doing this time last year. I found myself on my Zoom screen and then sort of like opening another tab. And I had just learned, this is terrible, I had just learned that there's such thing as like online thrift stores. I'm really sorry if that knowledge leads you into an addiction the way it did for me. But there are online thrift stores. And so I was going around and I was on Zoom on one screen, but then on the other half of my screen, another tab, I was scrolling down different online thrift stores, and I found myself actually like buying stuff. And this is really unlike me, but I just bought stuff I didn't need all the time. But it was just like, I was just on Zoom and I was not entertained in any way. My life felt very like numb and boring, as I'm sure many of yours have during lockdowns. And here's what happened. I bought like, it was really nice. Like it was a cotton like jumpsuit. And it came in the mail and I was like, oh yes, like this thing I ordered from an online thrift store. And I tried it on and it was really nice. And I wore it for a few days and then I actually forgot about it for like several weeks. And I was digging through my wardrobe one weekend and I saw this cotton jumpsuit and I was just like, whoa, totally forgot about this. And I just had a moment of like, that didn't make me happy. And it seems so funny, right? But it didn't fix the situation I was in. It didn't make it better. I was still in a lockdown. I was still bored and sad. I was still on Zoom every day, day in and day out. The cotton jumpsuit didn't fix it. And it was a bit of a trivial moment, but it was a real realization I look back on now of like, I was living in the lie that the empire of never enough had given me, that if I just grasped at something, that perhaps it would fix my problem. In fact, it would maybe fix things for me. Henry Nouwen calls this searching for unconditional love where it can't be found. And we all have things like that, I think, you know, maybe it's online shopping, but maybe it's coffee or sugar, or perhaps it's something even a little trickier, something a little deeper and harder to get at, like fishing for compliments or overworking, you know, not taking breaks or binging Netflix or scrolling down Twitter, or I don't know what it is for you, but we all have places we search for unconditional love where it can't be found. And fasting is experimenting with saying no to those things for a time, even if they're good things, right? Usually they are. I mean, there's nothing wrong with thrifting, right? Even if they're good things, it's saying no for a time. And what we find is that we experience something restful about a life where we don't cling to those things anymore. You know, Jesus asked this piercing question in the book of Mark. He says, what good is it for someone to gain the whole world but forfeit their soul? What good is it for you to cling to those things and yet to find your soul eroding inside? There's something restful about saying no to gaining the world. And then about finding that kind of capital T treasure that can be lost from us when we're on the pursuit of even good gifts around us that just aren't the best thing. So that's what fasting is. It's challenging our compulsions for the sake of our soul. So let me read the passage now. Matthew 6, starting at verse 16, Jesus says, "When you fast, do not look gloomy like the hypocrites, for they disfigure their faces that their fasting may be seen by others. Truly I say to you, they have received their reward. But when you fast, anoint your head and wash your face, that your fasting may not be seen by others, but by your Father who is in secret. And your Father who sees what is in secret will reward you." The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. So just as Jesus said earlier in Matthew 6 about giving and praying, here he says to fast in secret. And this would have been especially striking as a teaching for the people in Jesus's time. Giving in secret, praying in secret, all really radical things. But fasting in secret would have, in some ways, fundamentally challenged their perception of what fasting is all about. And that's because fasting in that time had sort of become a communication tool. It would sort of be a way for people to express to the people around them and to God that there's something they want that they don't have. When religious people in that time would want something, they'd fast as sort of a way to get the attention of their community and God's attention. Almost to kind of twist God's arm into changing something in their life to suit them better. When I was reading about this, it made me think of like children who have tantrums, right? They overexpress their needs. They fall to the floor and start banging around and punching things and being like, "Help, I need attention." And parents, especially listening, might say exactly what Jesus said a few verses back in Matthew 6 when speaking about praying in secret. They might say, "I already know what you need before you ask. There's no need for tantrums." Jesus said back there, he said, God already knows what you need before you ask him, so you don't need to disfigure your face, to chase God down with your complaints, to start doing radical things like limiting your consumption of food in order to get his attention. And you don't need to get his attention because you already had it. And this is really fundamental to these teachings of Jesus. What Jesus is saying is that God has already been giving you loving attention since the moment you began to exist, and he hasn't stopped once, like a good mother or father again, right? You've been on God's mind since day one. And there's nothing you can do to lose his attention. You know, I think of friends of mine who have become parents, and they say the big difference between life before having children and life after having children is that once you have children, they are always on your mind. Even if in the back of your mind, they're always, when you wake up, when you go to sleep, when you're driving around, when you're doing your groceries, like they are always on your mind. And sometimes we, like the people of the ancient Near East, think we need to disfigure our faces and go out in public and prove that we're in distress enough that God's attention will come to us. But the good news is that he's never not been loving you. The invitation here is to notice that all along You've been resting in the arms of the one who's been holding you since day one. And so we fast in secret. And, well, why do we do this? We do this because the whole point of fasting, as we said before, is to loosen our grip on things that are good, but that we just don't need. And if we were to let everyone know, oh, I'm so spiritual, I never shop on Amazon anymore, or, oh, I'm such a good person that I never give in to advertisements because I'm just so holy and strong. If we were to do those sorts of things, we'd already, as Jesus says, we'd already have received our reward. And the purpose of our spiritual fast would not be complete. We'll not have refined our desires. We'll not have reoriented our heart. Because we'll still find ourselves looking for unconditional love where it can't be found. Looking for it this time in the affirmation of others, in the popularity we receive for doing all the right things and being a good person in the eyes of the people around us. And the problem with that, Jesus says, he says, I don't even think that he's saying that it's a bad thing, that we're a bad person if we do it in front of others. Instead, he's just saying, I have your best interest in mind here. And ultimately, if you're fasting for the good looks you get from others, you're still not free. And freedom, I mean, interior spiritual freedom is what Jesus' whole teaching is about here. It's about not needing all the things that the empire of never enough tells us that we need. It becomes a cage, right? It becomes something that at first we just wanted, but we start to need. We start to compulsively desire. And I'm sure we've all experienced it. That good feeling of recognizing that we're being recognized and then becoming a bit obsessed with it. And so there's something so freeing about keeping it secret. About saying I needed not that anyway. And we might just start to notice that we feel free.
So that practice of secrecy, of letting go of the need to be recognized for our good works, in some ways is a fast. It's a fast from hustling up our social ladder. It's a fast from popularity, you could say. And as I was thinking about that this week, I was thinking that in some ways, that's the deepest and truest fast of them all. And one of the reasons I say that is because the Hebrew word for fast in the Jewish scriptures that Jesus would have read during his life and ministry is tanit, which literally translates as humiliation. And I think that's really interesting. This not hustling to be well-liked, not trumpeting all our good, generous, and enlightened actions to all the people, but rather keeping that secret, in some ways is saying yes to being humble, to humiliation. And so fasting then becomes not just saying no to good things for a time, but even saying yes to humility. Saying yes to not needing to be anyone in particular in your social circles, feeling free to take the sidelines, to not be noticed, and even when we're noticed, to not be noticed in the way we would hope. It's shaking off that compulsion to try to manage others' perceptions of us. Henry Nouwen has this quote that I really think gets at the heart of what we're talking about this week about fasting. He says, "We have to fashion our own desert where we can withdraw, shake off our compulsions, and dwell in the gentle, healing presence of our Lord." That fashioning of a desert is, I think, what we're speaking about when we're speaking about fasting, about saying no to good things, and about even humility, right? But as I was thinking about that this week, I wanted to take time to acknowledge that sometimes we don't need to fashion our own deserts because sometimes life puts us in the desert, not by our own volition. Sometimes we don't need to say no to things because things are taken away from us and we experience loss. And I mean, I think this is what a lot of us are experiencing even now, right? Lockdowns and life being put back online, and you know, some of us are getting sick and loved ones are getting sick, and some of us are on the front lines of this pandemic, in and out every day, going into crowded hospitals and other home care and whatnot. And it's really sad, and there's a lot to grieve. And in this way, I think we simply find ourselves in the desert without us fashioning one for ourselves. And I want to take a moment to invite us to consider how it is that perhaps these desert seasons could be times where we look at the state of our lives and notice where are there invitations to loosen our grip on something we've been clinging to too tightly? And, or, where is my grip simply being loosened by the very nature of the way things are right now? And I think that that carries the same spirit of an intentional fast. I was thinking about this saint from a few centuries back, Saint Ignatius of Loyola, who called this spirit holy non-attachment, which I think is really at the heart of fasting and secrecy, and something that, if we let it, just might happen to us, that life might just offer us in a season of desert wandering. And holy non-attachment, according to Saint Ignatius, is this spirit in our hearts of needing only Christ and life with Him, and thus holding everything else with open hands. Non-attachment is holding all things loosely because, frankly, we were never in control of it anyway. Non-attachment is, in some ways, just the acceptance of reality, the reality that you cannot curate your life. Nothing is for certain, right? Maybe the last 2 years taught you that. Taught you that you can try to make all things line up and you can cling tightly to those things, you know, whether it's like online shopping like me or whatever else, you can try to make everything the way you want them to, but chances are, it might all come crumbling down anyway, or it might all prove itself to not have given you what you thought that it was promising to give you, and it's all okay. It's all okay, because as Juliet of Norwich says, all is well, and every manner of things is well, because none of it was going to satisfy you, like the one thing that's certain can. Christ and life with Him. The good news for all of us who are in the desert, whether it's by our own volition or not, is that Christ alone suffices, and Christ is the one thing that can never be taken from you. In some ways, this takes us all the way back to the thesis statement of the whole teaching, the whole Sermon on the Mount, the beginning where Jesus says, "Blessed are the poor in spirit. Theirs is the kingdom of God. Blessed are us as desert people." Desert seasons are opportunities to loosen our grip on all else and find ourselves therefore blessed. Cultivating the spirit of fasting, this holy non-attachment in secret, means recognizing that nothing outside of you will fulfill you anyway. It means holding the pain of our lives, all there is to grieve and mourn, and walking on this good road, which someday, even if not today, someday will lead you to being able to say, without your fingers crossed behind your back, be able to say truly, "I needed not any of those things I've lost." I needed not any of those things I've fasted. I need not anything but Christ. I don't need to be anything in particular. I don't need to have anything be any particular way. I accept I am not in control. I accept reality. And then you are free. Be blessed, desert people. Yours is the kingdom of heaven. Amen.